Today is Wednesday, March 2nd. This is Lynn Downey interviewing Bill Green at his office at the Double J Court Self Storage.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Bill. And I want to start by asking you, just tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Where'd you go to school? Your early life.
I grew up in Kansas City and then went to school for college at Washburn University. And that was in Topeka, Kansas. I needed to go to a small school so I could kind of brown-nose the teachers because I'd get lost in the big school, and I needed some help to get through, you know. So I went to Washburn University. It was 5,000. And then I stayed there and went into business, got into real estate the first day out of college on straight commission, no vacation, no expenses paid, no nothing. It was kind of like, you got to be kidding. And then started a real estate company 2.5 years later, and then moved to Wickenburg in 1980. So that was in 1970 that I started there and in business in Topeka. And then, so I'm really known for people that have known me a long time. I'm known as a realtor. I was a very active realtor. Had my own office in Topeka and president of the board, and you know, all the fancy things, and then came out here and was extremely active until probably we built the Double J in 94, and probably in 98 or 99 then I'm still a realtor, but most people don't know that. I pay my dues just because I've been doing it all my life, but I'm not active at all for the last 15 years or more.
Why did you choose Wickenburg?
We chose Wickenburg because my wife had come to Remuda Ranch since she was a very young kid. Her father had a construction business in Kansas City, and he built, you know, what I'd call highways and gigantic parking lots for a big shopping centers, and they didn't have shopping centers in those days, but you know, it was a big, heavy thing, and he had that. But in the middle of the winter in Kansas City, there wasn't much to do. And so they would come to Remuda Ranch when it was a guest ranch. You know, you have to remind people of that. And so they started coming, I think, when she was 5 or 6 years old. So she came out here every year with her family, and they would stay for 2 or 3 weeks. And she tells me that, you know, in those days you'd park your car and have to charge the battery when you got ready to leave to make sure of that. But otherwise, the ranch would bring you into town. You'd ride horseback into town and do all these things. So it was like, we're not touching the car. We're just going to be cowboys. And that was the old days of the guest ranches.
Wow. What was your wife's main name?
Lynn Haydon, H-A-Y-D-O-N.
And
the parents were George and Sally Haydon. They were born in 1911 and 1914. Lynn and I were both born in 1947. So I'm going to be 69 this weekend.
Well, happy birthday.
I'm only 68 now, though. Because I know what 69 sounds like, you know. And it's like, well, I don't feel like that. I know what I think about when somebody says, oh, there's an old guy, he's 69. Oh, excuse me. You know, he's in his upper 60s. He was an old guy. No! So then business had been really good for us. We did a lot of investing during the inflationary 70s and did really well back on real estate in Topeka. And we decided, let's go for the good life and let's move to Wickenburg. We started coming out here. I had never seen anything like Arizona, and I can still remember the first image that I had to wake up that morning, because we came in after dark and we were at a guest ranch, and to look out there and see what I thought was looking at an oil painting from 1 foot away. Here's all these hash oil painting marks and all that. You know, you stand back further and it's really pretty, but up close it's like, you got to be kidding. This you call, you know, but we tried to stay. So I'm expanding from your that. So this was so we'd been coming to the guest ranches, I think, from 76 through 1980 or 77 through 1980. And we actually had reservations at Castle Hot Springs. And that summer or whenever before, we had to cancel the reservations because it burned. So you want to know what year I came here, but like what I'm just sharing with you, Lynn, this doesn't need to be in the transcript, but like the Wickenburg timeline that I've shared with you, my lifeline, my life diary, I call it, so I could go back and look and say what happened in 1976, what happened in 77, and here's all the things that happened in my life. So
you're a historian.
Yeah. So we came out here to the guest ranches, and when we moved here in 1980, it was really because business had been real good. Let's not work so hard. I mean, I had a lot of rental properties. I had an office that I was running. I was a top salesman myself. And it was like getting home at 8 o'clock at night and then having dinner and saying hi to the kids. And they still thought I was a good father. They just didn't know any better, you know. It was the quality time instead of the quantity time. But, you know, that's a myth, you know. But it actually worked with me. So anyway, so then we told the kids they were going to be in first grade and fifth grade, and we said, how would you like to move to Wickenburg? And so when we came out here the last year in February or March to come to the guest ranch at the end, we always came to the Wickenburg Inn. We went with some other family members that I'm backing up now. That year of Castle Hot Springs fire, we couldn't go there. We went to Saguaro Lake Ranch. I mean, we knew about Wickenburg, but we went to this small little ranch up there, and that was beautiful scenery. I mean, thinking back on it, I haven't been out there since, but Saguaro's everywhere, and, you know, you get an appreciation for the desert riding out on mules and, you know, the trail rides. It was a very small guest ranch, more like Kale Bar, very old and historic. So then we moved here in 1980, and it was for the good life. And it's been good.
What did your kids think about the change?
Oh, well, it's kind of like saying, do you want to move to Disneyland? Well, I guess so, you know. This is where they had vacationed, and so this was it. You didn't have to convince the kids. Are you kidding, you know?
You're the second person I've talked to who has referred to Wickenburg as Disneyland.
Mm.
That's fascinating.
Now, a little side note, I live out here in the country on good size acreage, and Rancho Casitas is next to me. They have 120 acres, and Reg Craig was the owner of it, and then when he died, that's where Kathy and his kids now own it and are running it, Kathy Billingsley. But I went horseback riding with Reg early on, and he shared with me, I think they only have maybe 10 different accommodations. They've got 5 or 6 duplexes, you know, something like that. And he shared with me that he had counted, and this was in the early 80s, he shared this with me, that he had counted over 100 families that had moved here that had stayed one time at Rancho Casitas. And I think that you say you're going to interview Rusty tomorrow. He'll tell you how the guest ranch has changed. That when I talk to Rusty's a good friend, and when I used to talk to him about the folks would stay for, Lynn's folks would stay for 2 or 3 weeks, he said, oh yeah, that's the way we used to have it all. And now somebody that stays for 4 or 5 days, that's a long timer, you know. So it's just the jet age and everything else, where before they drove out here and you just, you know, at the guest ranches. I'm getting off on all this.
No, that's perfect.
But that's what's changed. When we used to go to the Wickenburg Inn, we'd stay 8 nights, and that's because we would, I mean, not early on, but we loved their Saturday night cookout that they did, and C.W. Williamson's, which is for Chuck Williamson, so it was just C.W. is what he was called, but he was the guitar player, and they had a little band, and they put an album out in the 70s. Yeah. in the 70s, and we have a copy of that, a 33 and a third record album, you know, an album, that's what I mean, not a photo album. But they played really good music, so it was come out for the thing, you'd ride out horseback in the light and then come back in the dark or whatever. And the kids just loved that, and everybody did. That was the highlight of the week. So we'd come in on a Saturday and get that. And, you know, of course, I always joked with Lynn, we can stay here for 6 months. We can live here for 6 months with what we're paying for a guest ranch for 8 nights, you know. which didn't turn out to be the case, but it was close, you know.
Well, and for the record, tell me where the Wickenburg Inn was.
The Wickenburg Inn was probably the number two largest guest ranch after Los Caballeros. And by the way, when you see Rusty, it's Los Caballeros, not Lost Cab. You'll never hear management out there call it Lost Cab, so you're interviewing him tomorrow. So it's out where Wickenburg Ranch is now, where the new housing development is, that they've sold 60 homes or whatever. I mean, we'll put that in the tape here. They've sold 60-some homes, like, oh my gosh, back in the day when they had only sold 60 homes. But that was the Wickenburg Inn. It was built in probably 74 or 75. We went there in 76 or something like that. I think it was built in 74. And it was what I would call a slump block that it was built out of. And tile roofs, and they were little casitas. They were all duplexes. And they ran out of money, but it still was enough to operate on. Their lodge building was meant to be housing. There were rooms in the lodge, and the lodge was meant to be housing for the employees, but it turned out, oh no, we're not housing the employees out here. We've run out of money. We're not building the real lodge. So this dining room for that is going to be the lodge for the ranch.
Wow.
But the difference between Los Caballeros and the Wickenburg Inn was that at Los Caballeros, you needed to wear a coat to dinner. You couldn't come in a swimsuit for lunch and things like this. Wickenburg Inn had 11 tennis courts, and we were more into tennis than golf, and we weren't into being fancy and doing that. So, and Los Caballeros typically takes the children and puts them in a children's program. Well, we were coming out here to vacation with our kids, so we didn't want anybody taking our kids. We wanted to sit just with them. And so that was the kind of a quick difference between the Wickenburg Inn. It was more dusty and dirty than fancy and grass, you know.
What kind of memories does your wife have about Remuda in her youth?
Her memories are that the Burden family that owned Remuda Ranch, that was Sophie and Dana and Johnny and Pete Fletcher, that was Sophie's brother, she still refers to them, that was my second family. And that's the way that the guest ranches are. You know, you went out to interview Andy and Steve at the Flying E, you just told me before we started this, and those guests have been coming there, parents, and, you know, because the Flying E was started in 48, 49.
49, I think.
So it's been the same families coming, and you might even have three generations still coming. And Andy and Steve, they've only been managers out there since Vi died, and that was almost 12 years ago, very close to that right now. So she's been the manager for 11 and a half years, thereabouts. And if you talk to those guests, I'll bet Andy and Steve are their second family. But that's the way Lynn describes that. That was, the guest ranches in those days had, they really established a relationship. Now you go to a resort and you may never see who this person is. When we went out to the Wickenburg Inn, they would have a manager there, and he might only be there for 2 or 3 years. And he'd come around to the table and say, "Welcome to the Wickenburg Inn. We're glad you're here." You know, and I'm thinking, "Well, this is my fourth year." You know, but he had no clue. You see, that wouldn't have been the case with Andy out there, or with the Burdens. Hey, the Haydens are coming. Oh my gosh, this is a big event. And you know, that's just the way it was. It was, It was a second family, so that's her real memory of it. But you were assigned a horse at the time, and that's your horse for riding, and otherwise you were sitting in the sun writing letters. And they wouldn't, because of that, they wouldn't have thought about going to another ranch. Something else would have opened up. Oh no, we wouldn't do that to the Burtons. I mean, that's not just them. I think that would be the case with any of these people. I would bet that the people at Flying E, that none of them would say, oh, next year we're thinking about going over to Los Caballeros. And nothing against Los Caballeros. It would probably be the same there, but it's the intimacy of a small guest ranch. There might be people that try out other ones, but once they're locked into the little one, and I don't think they build it that way. I don't think they build it in of we've got to keep these guests. It's just the way they handled it, and that's the way the Burtons did, and I'm sure every other guest ranch around here mm-hmm. all did the same.
Yeah. Did you ever know some of the other families that ran, say, the KL Bar or the Monte
Vista? I know of them. Oh. You know, another person you might talk to is Cindy Logan's parents, the Pfingstags, Pfingstag.
Julie Brooks mentioned her.
Yeah.
When I talked with her.
And that's Sue Pfingstag is what she goes by, and Bill Pfingstag. And her, I always get it confused, that person in the picture that I showed you out here in the office, that is... I call him Smith. It's White. I gave you the wrong name. Her maiden name was White. And it was either Luke White or Bob White that owned that.
Yeah.
And I think Luke was her father and Bob was his very close brother. And they were both in the real estate business and owned most of the land from out west here at Safeway on up to Congress. I mean, I'm on land that the whites own, and it was White Development Company. They were the original big developers. They had all this land. They probably bought it for 50 cents an acre or something. You know, I mean, who knows? You know, but, and I'm not, she'll have a lot of memories of that, and I'm not sure whether it's her, I think it was her uncle, but she probably spent a lot of time over at Monte Vista.
Mm-hmm. And so that's Cindy Logan?
Yes.
And her parents were Sue and Bill? Or?
Yes, her parents are.
Okay.
And I can give you numbers for all those when we finish
here. Julie did. Okay. I just didn't have the relationship straight in my head. So that's great.
Yeah, and Sue is very sharp and be happy to meet with you, I'm sure.
Great, thank you. Were you always interested in Wickenburg history? When you started?
No, I had, it's funny that I have so much interest in Wickenburg history, but in school, oh my gosh, I had absolutely no interest in any kind of history. And all of a sudden out here, I kind of started taking an interest, but this could lead to the other thing because I'm known as having a terrific postcard collection on this.
Yeah, we're coming to that.
Oh, you want to do that right
no,
now?
Go ahead.
Because it kind of leads into that. But I was over at the, I'd always collected postcards just as a kid. You know, you go into a motel with the folks and they've got postcards on the counter, and that's why there's so many motel postcards out there. But, you know, I'd collect those and collect the matches and not to play with, although I certainly did that as a kid. You know, I'm a boy. So I had kind of a postcard collection from just anywhere that I'd been, you know, no big shakes. And I had been over to, years ago, to John, but he had where the... Right next to the Texas Cafe, what everybody else would call the Texas Hotel, the building with the angle on the front was called An Antique Store, which is kind of a funny name for an antique store. And John Bourgeot, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, and Penny is his wife's name. And he had postcards from all over. They were arranged by state if he didn't have that many. And otherwise, I went in there with a friend one time, and we were just in here, and while he's doing business with John, I'm over here saying, you got any Wickenburg cards? You know, I'm kind of looking, and so I look at these, and I'm thinking, well, gosh, you know. And, of course, I always had the attitude of collect whatever I can get a bunch of. I mean, as a kid, I collected bottle caps. You know, you go to the company picnic of my dad's, it's like, what are you going to do with all those bottle caps? Can I have them? Wow!
Such a boy.
You know, am I going to collect them? No, I just got a big tin of them, you know, and I started collecting more. So it was kind of like that, and I thought, well, this is really interesting, and I suppose that's what got me started on the history. You'd think that it would have been a lot longer than that, but that was maybe 20 years ago, which really isn't all that long from my standpoint. And then I started collecting some of those, and then I'd go back in and see what else do you have, and he would get some more, and then he'd call me on, 6 months later and say, Bill, I've got some other cards you ought to look at. And he put some cards in my hand and said, Bill, you need to own this. And it wasn't just that he was selling it. I mean, that when you have collected on eBay, as you may know, I mean, I check eBay every day of the year. And in the old days, I'd check it 2 or 3 times a day because in case there was a buy it now. Mm-hmm. And when we finish here, I'll show you some things that I've gotten here recently. Which is kind of rare for me to be able to get something recently because I don't mean it the way it sounds, but I've got a lot. So.
But again, there's only so much out there.
Yeah, and there used to be more things out there, I think, than what are coming out now. It was like that was the big thing where everything from the Northeast came out here to the Southwest where it belonged. And I have some, and you know, when I've been on eBay for 15 years, I think, and when you haven't seen a card since that I have, it means it is really rare. And I thank John for that he says, Bill, you need to own these. And I said, okay. You know, and other ones I wouldn't buy, and then I'd go back in, and he says, Bill, and he was a real collector and knew his stuff. So he wasn't just selling it to me. He was, you know, I mean, I'm sure he's doing well on it, but I'm crediting him with he knew what was good stuff, and so I was buying a bunch of those. Mm-hmm. How do we get over to that? Where are we supposed to be?
That's okay. Okay. It's all freeform. Well, it's about Wickenburg history. And what was the collecting? You have the collecting gene, and then that sort of tied in with Wickenburg history. Did one influence the other?
Well, when I would get a card, then, and like you, I mean, I've got a big, powerful magnifying glass, and I take that and hold it up here, and I go all the way around this, like, look at that cloud, or who's that up on that building, and where was this building? And so when I would find a building, then I'm doing research with people to say, where was this building? And sometimes I'd say, I reckon there was one down here that where the pizza, Carrie's Pizza is. Mm-hmm. And it was a building across the street, which used to be a motel, where that office building is, kind of thing. That was a motel called something that's not coming to me right now. And I looked at that and thought, where in the world is that? I haven't seen anything like this. But I recognized the wire fence. When I was a kid, you didn't have chain link. I don't think we had chain link. You had wire that kind of came up in ovals over the half circles over the top.
Oh, and, I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know, yeah. It's hard to describe here for the tape recorder, but it was funky. And I looked at that and I thought, I've seen that fence somewhere. And I got in the car and went down to that location and stood behind that fence. Now it's wrought iron. But at the time that I got the card, I stood behind that and looked across there, and it was because of the fence that I learned where that building was. And I'll show that to you when we finish it. But because it was real interesting. But it's that kind of thing. And then otherwise I'll talk to some old timers and say, what about this? And
wow.
So then the postcards, I would say, have led into, because as a realtor for so many years, then I'm all about where was it. I'm not really into the stories. You know, I've talked a lot with Jeannie Scott, the official town historian, I think she's called. She's more about this is what happened here and things like that. I'm more about here's a photo and here's the history of this photo and that led to this and this is what was around here. So I'm more of that, and maybe it's just from the visual standpoint. I'm not as interested in a card that shows five guys in front of it that, okay, they're old-time Wickenburg people. You know, this is who they are and, you know, la-di-da, but
well, that's really interesting.
I want to know the building that they're standing in front of, you know.
That's really interesting and very valuable when you're able to do the research and figure that out.
Yeah, but it's mostly, other than that fence story, that's my best one along that line. Otherwise, I've said, I think this is here, and, you know. But I, at one time, before digital cameras came out, I was going to try to take some of my cards and do a current snapshot of it and scan those in and put on a slideshow. Well, about that time, digital came around, and I'm going, who's got a slide projector? So I have a bunch of these, but now they've turned out to be, now they're current shots at that time, which was 15 years ago, of here's current shots. And you realize, to even walk downtown, I mean, when they were getting ready to do the bypass, I took a morning and walked down there and took pictures of, here's the old bridge, here's where the wishing well was, because nobody thinks about it, and it's just that perspective that I wouldn't have thought about before. But in 20 years, that will be an interesting slideshow of here's what was here before and here's what was there. You remember that business that was here? Oh, where did that go? Who were those people? What did they do?
Exactly.
So I still collect current postcards. There aren't many, you know, but when the chamber does some, I'm still buying current postcards that are issued today because they'll be a part of my collection in 20 or 30 years. If I'm around,
you know. Well, you're still young.
Oh, I'm still young.
That's right.
So that's the way I look at it. But when I hear somebody's going to tear something down, I mean, I went over to Burger King. It's going to be torn down this summer. I went over there a month or two ago and started snapping pictures of the inside, of the outside, because that'll be of interest. You remember when Burger King used to just be this building that sat at the back of the property? Now it's going to be at the front of the property. And they're kind of asking what they're doing, and I said, I'm here historizing, what's my word?
Documenting.
Thank you. documenting about the Burger King that will be torn down. Can I come back to the kitchen? And the one person says, well, no, you're not supposed to be back here in the kitchen. I said, well, I'd like to take some pictures. Who are you? And I said, well, I'm Bill Green. I'm with the Chamber of Commerce. Because these will end up at the Chamber of Commerce, you know. I mean, I'll show them for the Chamber of Commerce. So they said, oh, okay, come on back. So I go back here and just take some pictures of the people cooking and things. It was a slow time, so, you know, 2:30 in the afternoon. But so it's thinking along those lines, and I'm only passing that along for somebody else to do in the future that, I mean, Johnson's Dry Goods, I heard they were going to be closing, and so when they were closing out, I said, can I take some pictures? And I took pictures. I mean, the building won't come down, but I wanted to take pictures. That cash register that they have in there been there since 1952.
Wow.
You know, I've got some photos of it I can show you. It's one of these big monsters. I mean, it's 2.5 feet across, you know, like, I don't think you're bringing in that much money.
Don't drop on your foot.
Don't, oh, no. No, this, let alone, this wouldn't even be a boat anchor. You couldn't get it out of the boat. So, and then they let me go upstairs, and that was very interesting. You know, the history of that building is that there's a door on the north side. I've only been here 35 years, so I'm not sure of my streets, but I'm calling Tegner going north and south, but on the north side, that road that goes down there to Johnson's Lumber, mm-hmm. or is that the next street? No, it goes down the side of Town Hall. You know, okay, so on the south side of Town Hall, there's an entrance that goes up there, a long set of stairs, maybe 20 steps. You know, a normal single-story house would have 14, 15 steps. This had 20 or more. And I was told that there used to be a dentist office up there, that there were a lot of different offices. And so that was... So I'm taking pictures of all the stuff up there just to have it. So I'm not bragging about it. I'm just saying this is what I think is important to do for history, and it won't be of interest until someday something else is in there and say, this is what the building looked like before they went in.
How many Wickenburg postcards do you have?
I'm guessing 400 or so. I don't know.
Are they all unique, or do you collect duplicates?
No, I don't collect... Well, I have many duplicates just for trading someday, or somebody else wants to get started, you know, that I might have bought if it was really cheap or something, but no, I'm thinking of individual cards that would be that. Plus duplicates, so...
Wow. What was the impetus, you know, just sort of the history of postcards? What's the impetus for someone, you know, making these postcards, like I've seen of business, downtown businesses, here's the highway, you know, here's a shot of the highway,
yeah,
here's a shot of the bridge. Was it?
Well, what happens is, and I've only learned this from real collectors, real serious collectors. Ray Miller was a friend of mine, a good friend of mine up in Prescott. He was an old man and died here a year or two ago. But he had the foremost collection of postcards on all of Yavapai County. And in the old days of eBay, then I see, and his name, you know, if you've been on eBay for a while, now they don't show who bought it.
I know.
But in the old days, he was R.E. Miller, or R. Miller, R. Miller 22, or something like this. And I'm thinking, who's this guy that's bidding against me? That price is going up. Who's this R.E. Miller? So I write to him and say, hey, you know, I'm real nice, and I say, I see that we're kind of competing. Tell me about yourself. And he said, well, I live up here in Prescott. And I said, well, I've got a cabin up in Prescott. How about we meet? And so he collected Yavapai, which means he's coming down here into Wickenburg. He's collecting, you know, part of Wickenburg.
Yeah.
And we came to an agreement of, you're not going to mess with this, and I'll quit collecting Castle Hot Springs, because I was collecting Castle Hot Springs. And so I had a nice part I had a good collection on Castle Hot Springs. And so we kind of came to an agreement that he wouldn't, he'd stop there, and if it said Wickenburg on it, it was mine, and so I'd write to him. And so that was real nice. And we just became friends. I'd see him, you know, when I had a cabin up there, and we'd go up in the summer on weekends, and I'd see him two or three, four times in a summer. We'd visit and go to some postcard shows down in Phoenix once a year and together. And but then when he died, then his wife talked to me and said, would you like to, you know, I'm going to be selling the collection. So I helped her to sell the collection. Jeremy, I've arranged for him to come up and do that.
Jeremy Rowe,
who is the foremost collector on anything photographic in Arizona. I've never been to his place. Ray had been to his place, and they say it is phenomenal.
Sure.
That you can be there for a week. And, I mean, you know, I think it's one of those things that he hadn't even seen cards that he's bought 20 years ago, that they're just back in an archive somewhere, you know. But and it's nice that he's such a young person. I mean, I think he's 6 or 8 or 9 years younger than me, that he's not old, you know. So he'll be around, and he's just the authority on that. And so I bought the Castle Hot Springs cards. I told Jeremy, I said, I'm going up to buy some of these, and I'm going to have first pick, but then on the others, you can do that. Because Ray also taught me, he said, Bill, you're going to have a tendency to collect your area, and you're going to get into other things, and I advise you not to. In other words, Ray, his thing was Yavapai County, and the next thing you know, well, let's go over to La Paz County, and there's some nice cards on Maricopa, and you won't have any big deal there. Concentrate on your area. And it was just nice advice. And so I've done that, but I still collect on Wickenburg and Aguila and Siloam and Wyndon. Mm-hmm. Siloam is as far as I go. And then Congress and Yarnell and Morristown. Morristown I even have a couple of cards on. And, you know, from, I may have, two may be a lot, but I know I have one. Wow. So that's just my focus of that. And so where did we... So the history... So I, as you can see, I'm kind of rattling here on things. The the history on postcards, you know, it's such a romance to talk about, you know, on the pictures out here in our office at the Double J here. I was telling you before we started this about these pictures are taken in 1938, these big blow-ups that I have, so I'm saying this for the recorder here. But it was not a great time. I mean, no air conditioning. The Depression is still going on, kind of at the tail end of it, but that doesn't mean anything's moving up. It just means it's quit going down. So this was not a wonderful time to be anywhere. But it's kind of romantic that the people say, oh, I wish I was there at that time. Postcards, I think, started in the 1890s, maybe late. And then you think, no, you're not doing any texting. You're not calling people's cell phone number. You know, my dad worked for the phone company, and when he was going to make a long distance call, and he was born in 1915, but even when I was a teenager, he would walk around the house and say, everybody be quiet, I'm about to make a long distance call. And I realized later, the reason was that the rates were so expensive to call, whatever expensive was at the time, in relation to salary, that you didn't want to have to be repeating anything. I mean, wow. Why else would you be quiet? It's like, no, I'm being charged by the minute, and, you know, Aunt Ethel died, and we've got to arrange this, and that's the only reason that you did. You didn't just say... you didn't call somebody up and say, my son was accepted to this university or something like that. You wrote a letter. And in the early days, you wrote a postcard. And so the earliest postcard that I have on Wickenburg is 1909 with any postmark. Now in Prescott, you can find cards that are 1900 and maybe even a little before. And it shows that Wickenburg just wasn't much in 1909 even. And then I have some meaning 10, 12, 14 that are from the teens or maybe early 20s, you know, along in there. But in the old days, you just wrote on this and in the early days, the postcard, the picture side of the postcard would typically be a smaller image. It didn't fill up the whole front. You would have I'm drawing for her here, but here's the postcard, and you would have the image here like this. Oh. In the upper left-hand corner. It would take up three-fourths of it, but you would write on the right-hand side and below.
I've seen that.
You've seen that? Yes. And then in 1907, they came out with a divided card, and so... Before 1907, by postal regulations, could only put the address on the back and the picture was on the front. So they said, we're going to make the picture smaller and so that you have a place to write, and the back was only for the address. And then in 1907, that was when the postcard collection, they call the divided part, and that's when they put a line down the middle and in the early days, they would put a line down the middle. And the right half was only for the address, and the left half was for this. You could still write on the backside. Some of the postcards, even after 07, were still with a smaller picture on the front because people were accustomed to that. You could write there, but then also write on the back. And so then that started that we can do this, and now you can kind of take any small little portion you want. You know, you can take one-third for the address if you want to, and right over there, and sometimes they'll divide them and sometimes they won't. So, but you know, when you got to a destination, you sent a postcard. It cost you a penny and to say, I got here, or we're vacationing, and that's where wish you were here.
Yeah.
You know, it's just to let them know, and then people, the only reason that postcards of these older eras are even available is because people would put them into their scrapbook and say, this is where we've been, and I'd call you over and say, Lynn, come on over, let me show you about our trip. And here's all my card, and we flipped through the pages, and then it got into be, let me show you my slideshow, and then my movie camera, and now it's just we send you some digital images from the place.
And you're done with it, yeah.
And so some people that might collect postcards might have kept those, and the reason is, and they're getting scarcer because what happens when eBay came around is that there might have been cards from Mabel up in her attic when Frank dies, and they're up there, and the kids go through and say, anybody want these cards? And typically they say, I don't want them, and they toss them. Well, these could be some good cards in today's standards.
Yeah.
Or somebody would come along, they might sell them at a garage sale, a whole box for $5, and somebody comes along and then sorts them out, and they don't even know where Wickenburg is, but they say, this says Wickenburg, Arizona. You and I see that card and go, oh, I don't have that. And that's why it's getting a little scarcer, because everybody's already talked to Mabel and Frank. Do you have any old postcards up there? Because they're going well on eBay.
Yeah, they are. You know, I wanted to ask you, on that 1909, that earliest postcard you have, what's the image on the 1909?
The image is a place on Frontier Street, and it's not even a real photo postcard. You know, our PPC?
Yeah.
Do we need to explain that? Or
real photo postcard, our PPC, yeah.
but you know, that's a real photographic image on what we'd call today Kodak paper. You know, you and I, I'm just explaining it for the recording. But this was a printed image that I call dots. You know, every newspaper, every image in there is made up of teeny little dots. Every magazine is made up of...
the halftones.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I think it's called halftones. Yeah.
And those are made up of dots. We think of them, boy, you have enough dots that are close enough together, you say, well, that is a photograph. But a real photograph is when you take a photograph and put it on photographic paper, and then you print the back of it for the postcard. So it wasn't even that. I can show it to you, but it was... It was a classic card. It was J.C. Reed. We have Reed's subdivision down here past, down below the Christian Academy, which is McLennan School. And down there was a subdivision, and that was his subdivision. And he had a store on Frontier Street. The museum records say that the J.C. Reed store was a store on Frontier Street, but I think it was where... It looks like it's where the little building is that's now a sandwich place next to the Hacienda building that people call the old barbershop.
Uh-huh.
And I think it wasn't. I think it was there where Bank One was, or Valley Bank, Bank One. Chase was downtown right across from the Hacienda building.
Yeah.
You know, that building right there on the other side of the street from the Hacienda building.
Yeah.
I don't know what's in there now. The medical people are. And I think it was there where that is. But he had all of his employees out in front, so it's one of those classic pictures that you never think to take. You know, I mean, when we talked a half hour ago about taking things, it's great to take a picture and look at it 30 years later and go, oh, you remember Fred? You remember old Crazy Lou that worked for us? And, you know, and there's Susie Q and, you know... So that was him, and there's a dog in the picture, and here's him and 11 of his employees or something with some barrels around and things like that. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, speaking of crazy people, maybe not so much crazy people, but I know you've known some amazing people in your time here in Wickenburg. Can you talk about a few of the people you've gotten to know that you think made a difference in your life and certainly in the life of Wickenburg?
Well, I've always said that Steve Barnes had the Coldwell Banker office here, and I'm just putting in a good word for him. He's my age, He lives now over in Texas, but I said for years, he was on the town council, and what I always look for in a member of the town council or in the President of the United States is somebody that can make good decisions. And Steve could make good decisions. And I don't mean, you know, we all know people that their life is a mess because they've made poor decisions all of their life and this person made some good, you know, I'm not referring to that. I was his friend at Coldwell Banker, and I would go to him and say, Steve, I think we ought to do this. This doesn't seem right over here. And he says, let me think about it. I'll give you my answer in the morning. And he'd come back in the next day, and it wasn't always in my favor by any means. It was a good decision. Mm-hmm. And so I always thought that was great on the town council. What oftentimes happens when we elect people on the town council, we've got some big issue, whether it's the library. Well, how do you feel about the library? Well, there you're going to be on that for 4 years. You're one of seven people that make any decision you want to. It only takes four people to make any decision you want to. Four is the majority. And we're going to elect somebody by how they feel about the library or how they don't feel about the library. There's lots of more decisions to make. That happens to just be the one that's the controversy now, but we've got many others. So it's, you know, I don't care how they feel about the library. I want to know, tell me your, you know, and it's hard to know how somebody thinks, how well they make decisions. We haven't learned that in any presidential debate that's going on right now. You know, I mean, nobody's asked them, how do you make decisions? How would you weigh this? You know, I mean, but Steve Barnes was a real quality person. I have a great memory of Roy Coxwell, but if you've talked to Royce Ann Cardinal, who's now married and...
Not yet. And I'm going to talk to her next month.
Oh, great. Yeah. You know, her dad was known as Mr. Wickenburg, mm-hmm. And Roy was always fun. I would go in and talk to him. He'd be in his office, and I'd go in and say, you got a few minutes? Come on in, you know. And we'd talk history, so that was always fun of... why is this over here and what happened here? And you know, as a realtor, I've known a lot of very interesting people here that you handle the sale of their homes. But as far as you know, Jeannie Curio is very interesting person. It's not that I've ever been to lunch with her or anything, but she's 90 some years old, and you know, other than riding on the float this year, it was only a few years ago that she would walk the whole parade route in her cowboy boots. I mean, and I had her come and speak to Rotary one time with us, and she was in the military. I'm trying to tell you this story, and so I'm not going to have it right, but I think she has a real good memory of things. And but I had her come and speak to Rotary because she had told me this story that I'm going to tell you, and then I had her tell it here. But she was in the military, and she says, in those days, I was playing pool. I was really good at pool, in a pool hall. And the sheriff came in, or the, you know, whatever, and says, a woman cannot be in a pool hall. You have to leave. And she says, I'm not leaving. I'm playing pool. And, you know, she's on leave from the, whatever, you know. And they haul her off to jail and say, now we're going to let you go if you promise not to play pool again. And I guess the judge, they stand in front. And he says, and she said, you'll see me again, judge. I mean, this is an interesting attitude, you know.
Wow. How do you spell her last name?
Curio. Corrio, but that isn't right. It's.
I'll find it.
Curio.
Okay.
And I don't even know where she's living. But, you know, her stories may also be kind of glorified and things. You know, I don't know.
Well, that happens.
But I'm amazed that somebody that's 90 years old as a woman, and then she ran for mayor here 8 or 10 years ago. You know? and as an example of taking pictures of people, I've got a picture of her with her campaign hat on, a campaign button on her hat, you know, and here she is all dressed up like nobody would be dressed these days. And she's going around to businesses and with her campaign button on her hat. And I said, Jeannie, let me take a picture of you here. Oh, yeah, she poses. And so she's very interesting, but nobody really comes to mind. I'm stalling here.
That's okay. Well, you've talked a lot about how you feel about Wickenburg. And what would you say, if somebody was thinking about moving to Wickenburg, what would you say to them about why it would be a good thing for them to move here?
I think I grew up in Kansas City, so I was a big city kid. We lived in town as opposed to now I live out of town. And I think that small towns are the best kept secret, and it's probably good that they're best kept secret. When my kids both went to the U of A, we've got two daughters, and they went in 88 and 92, and when they went to U of A down in Tucson, I told them ahead of time, you're from a small town. This is what the big city girls and boys are going to think when they hear that you're from Wickenburg, Arizona. I can tell you what they're going to think about you. Even they may not express it, but they're going to think that you're, because this is what I thought when, I mean, all of my friends, we all knew that kids from small towns were not as cool. They weren't up on the fashions. They didn't know the lingo. You know, they were not cool. And when I went to Washburn University and was in a fraternity, the kids that I respected the most, that had a great work ethic, they were all from small towns. Their dad owned the hardware store. They grew up on a farm. You know, Daryl Stadell here has worked all of his life, and he grew up in Holton, Kansas, or Holt or Hoyt, or whatever it is up there, north of Topeka. And he's never known what it's not like. At 4 years old, he's out here milking the cows before he goes to school. So you talk about a work ethic. This guy has just, you know, it's different than me being a city guy and making some good decisions. I'm not talking about me being such a great decision maker, like what I was referring to before, but having things happen and I was lucky. And so then to finish the story on my kids, they would, after a while, bring some friends home with them and come and stay at our house for the weekend. And those city girls were, their jaw was dropped, you know, the whole weekend they were here. Oh, my gosh, this is so nice. I haven't heard any sirens. I haven't heard, you know, it is so quiet. You know, I mean, just all the things and about a small town. And I say, my kids aren't any quarterback of the high school football team, but they have been in the paper. I've been in the paper for doing nothing in particular. You know, I never would have been in the Phoenix paper, and my kids wouldn't have ever been in the Phoenix paper. Not that being in the paper is any big deal, but I think it's great when the Wickenburg Sun takes a picture of, here's this third grade class that went on this field trip. My only objection is they don't always list the names down here. It's like they'll name you and me in a picture, but they don't always name, here's nine kids that went and got this, you know, did something. You know, let's put their names down here. You know, they're people too. Mm-hmm. And it really showed it there of that. And I know what my relatives think that are living in bigger cities. Like, are you still out there in Wickenburg, Arizona? And it's like, you're dang tootin' I am. You know, are you still living the horrible life? I mean, I'm down in Phoenix taking my brother to the airport on Tuesday, yesterday. Oh, my gosh. You know, why would anybody want to do that? And they just don't think anything about driving 45 minutes across town to go to work, try to find a parking place and do all that and fight the traffic back. Oh, my gosh, at least I had two of us in the car so we could be in the express lane, the carpool lane.
That's why I retired. I'm done with that.
You know, so I think it's just, it's more of the best kept secret. That's the advantage to a small town. It's just, you know, you can learn your way around a lot quicker. I mean, when we moved here, we knew the Burden family. That was it. We didn't know anybody else. Lynn knew, and I didn't even know them. Lynn knew Johnny and Dana and Pete and Sophie, and that was it. But But it's kind of fun, you know, back to us, it's just for 30 seconds. It was kind of fun for us to pick up and just start a whole new life. I mean, you can really be anybody you want to be if you can fake it that long. It doesn't last very long, you know, but I was 33 when I moved here. And to come out here and move out to the country instead of being in the city, and to have some horses where I couldn't even recognize a horse before, you know, and these kind of things. So we just thought, let's do an entire change of our life. Instead of all of our friends were right there in the neighborhood, and we're living out here in the country by ourselves, and we became, by living out so far, which isn't that far now, but it was at the time, then my girls became much more friends with each other. They were best friends, where before Kelly's friends were this way and Whitney's friends were down this block, and you know, that was all fine, but out here they became best friends and are still. So
did I
answer that question, or am I rattling?
No, you did a great job.
I don't remember what the question was, but oh, small town. It was, what's the advantage to a small town? I just think one of my favorite movies along that line is Doc Hollywood. Have you ever seen that? You know, I think that's the epitome. And when I see the mayor coming along here with Michael J. Fox walking down the street trying to convince him to move to his town as the doctor, and I'm thinking of Ron Badowski, you know, that Ron Badowski is our mayor. Hey, Joe, you ought to consider this, you know, and they pay him with a pig. You know, I mean, it was the big city kid that finally realizes, gee, it is nice here, you know.
One final question, which I was going to ask you earlier. Tell me the history of this place, the Double J.
The Double J was built by John Jones or something like that. That was the Double J. He owned it, and it was built in 1940 as a motor court. And for the recording here, you started off with hotels, and it didn't just go to motels that were out in the country. There was hotels, and then motor courts. It was turned into auto courts. So it was hotels and then an auto court. And court meant motel. Motel didn't come along for a long time afterwards. So it turned into auto court, motor court, motor camp was maybe even first. Auto camp.
And, auto camp.
Yeah. Auto camp was, you know, you think, are you going to camp? Well, you're about to do that because these are shacks. You know, drive out past Aguila and you'll see some of those little motels over there on the left that are so interesting. They're interesting to me. And so then he owned it for a year and a half or so, and he sold it to Alpha Wagner and Phillips. They were a niece and that. So, and then I bought it, I say we, in 1986. We closed on it, and we bought it really as an investment. I bought it with four other people. And so I had a 25% interest, but then we were kind of running it as apartments. The difference between a motel, and by that time the sign outside said Double J Motel. They took off the word court because nobody, you know, now we're in the modern age, and the Westerner used to be a court. It was a Westerner court and then a motel. And then the Bridge Motel was Bridge Court before. So everybody was court before, and it's like, oh, we got to go with the new word. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it just all changed overnight. But so in 1940, it was Double J Motel. And then we bought it in 86. And then slowly I started buying out my partners. I kind of fell in love with the place, just the old history of it. But I thought, if I'm going to do something with the property, which is what we did with the self-storage, I was running it for free, just kind of managing it. We had a manager that we had a little house back there in the corner, as you can see in the pictures there. And so we had them, but I was the one kind of keeping the books on the thing and all this. And, you know, it wasn't any big job. I'm not taking any brownie points for it, but I was kind of the one in charge of the place. But then I started buying all the rest of them out. And then a couple of years later, I put in the self-storage in 94. And the only reason we changed it back to Court, we were Double J Motel, and when we, at one point before I built the storage, I wanted to keep the sign historic. So I guess it was in 93, 94, I refurbished the whole sign, which was kind of a big deal. And Earl Orner was a sign painter. You talk about somebody cleaning up the town. Earl Orner is still around, but he came to town from somewhere else, and he was a sign painter. And so he's kind of going door to door and saying, hey, I see, it looks like you need a new sign. And otherwise, the signs were looking ratty, and for the first time ever, he's putting some designs on here. So I'm getting off on the subject, but when I say he cleaned up the town, you clean up the signs, it does clean up the town. I mean, when you have paint peeling and things like that. So I said, let's redo the whole sign. And so he stripped it all down, but you put up see-through paper so that you can see exactly how to put everything else back up. And it used to say Double J Motel, modern and complete, across the top under the cowboys. Most people never see the top of our sign. Most people don't even know it's named Double J Court because they're reading the marquee sign that we have after 22 years of that and 2,300 different sayings on there. So he came back in and said, Bill, this used to say Court underneath. I said, well, Double J Court, that sounds a lot nicer, but everybody knew it in town as Double J Motel. So I said, well, for the real historic of it, let's go back and put up Court. And so he was able to trace the old part there, and C-O-U-R-T has the same letters as M-O-T-E-L. So he put that back up, and for the first 8 years that we were in the self-storage business, we didn't even have a sign that said anything about self-storage. We kept the old sign up for 8 years. And I finally thought, you know, this is kind of not smart. You know, we ought to probably let business people know what business we're in. So that would have been we built in 94, so in 02 we finally changed the sign, and I had it redone again because now I had it done with automotive paint and, you know, a real, real professional. I mean, Earl Orner did a terrific job, but, you know, now they use automotive paint, the same paint that you use on your car, on a metal sign like that. Well, it sticks a lot better, and, you know, you can do things with it. And then we had the neon put back in that had been there before, and so I wanted to light that up, and used to have neon on the cowboys. And, you know, I ought to probably look at doing that sometime. But that sign's been there since 1940 in the same location.
Wow.
So that's kind of the history of it.
What happened to the apartment, the motel portion?
They went to the dump.
Yeah.
We took out, when I designed it, the buildings were built perpendicular with Wickenburg Way because we had these, what were then apartments. They're little junker apartments, don't get me wrong. It sounds like I own an apartment complex. No. Don't exaggerate, Bill. This was a junker. And so we're renting them by the week, by the month, you know, that type of thing. But I wanted the people to still have a view of the street and not feel closed in. And will the self-storage tenants think that this is a threat to their security? Or will they think of it as, oh, I got people watching out, and if somebody was to break into something, now we have a fancy lock system that in 15 years we've never been broken into, but, you know, because it's just the whole lock system. That's another story, not for today. But so then we finally tore them down, and then I built that up there, and then the house was back here, and I had people object to tearing the house down because it was historic, but it was just since 1940. Mm-hmm. But Habitat for Humanity, I tried to give it to them because it was up on blocks and it had a hardwood floor in it. But they said, no, we can't use this. And I'm thinking, isn't it interesting that Habitat for Humanity, we've got to give a free house to people that's better than this one I'm trying to give them free. No, Bill, this isn't up to the standards of what we're giving people today. And I'm thinking, even our houses are thrown away. That's what I thought. And I told him so, and he thought I was real upset. But I said, no, I understand. You know. And so which was kind of a funny story. I'll just take 30 seconds. But Coney Orozco was a real character in Wickenburg. And he was our public works director and had been working for the town for 40 or 50 years. And now he was in charge of all, you know, public works, sewer, water, streets, everything else. And he probably died, I'm guessing 8 or 9 years ago. and he retired before that. But we got ready to tear this down, and Coney was really, really ornery. And he would just cuss and yell at you. That's just the, kind of the way, that was his M.O. So I take our first load out here to the dump, and he said, nope, we're getting ready to close the dump. We're not going to be taking anymore. We're not taking any building material anymore. And so this guy comes back down there. And so I go out here to see Coney. And I said, where's Coney? And Coney happened to be out there. And I go out and say, Coney, I want to dump this stuff. Bill, I told your man that was hauling it out here, nope, we're not taking it anymore. I said, Coney, we've been paying taxes on that property for the last 50 years. We're going to dump it. Where do you want it? And he said, put it back over there in the corner. Because to haul that to Phoenix, so that's where it all went when I say to the dump. It was one of the last stuff out there, but that's the way you had to talk to Coney because, and we kind of laughed, but I didn't want to have to haul it down to the Northwest Regional Landfill. I mean, it would have cost me a mint, and it was free out here, but it was one of the last free, you know. So that was my quick 30-second story. It was kind of interesting. Yeah, Coney. Yeah, Coney was a character.
Wow. Do you know his backstory?
No, I don't, but Royce Cardinal could tell you that, but I'll tell you one story that I'm thinking even, it was probably even in the late 90s, which I don't think is that long ago, you know, 15, 18 years, 19, 20, you know, along in there. I'm down here at the Public Works Office, which is on Coney Orozco Drive. It's on the road up to Turtleback. They named the road after him. But if you go back there, hidden back in there is the Public Works Department. And that was Coney's office. And I went out there the first time to go see Coney about building this place or something else that I was working on. And I walk in, and here is a full-size poster the size of this, you know, a Farrah Fawcett type poster. You remember all those in the old days? Except this was a Hawaiian girl, topless, and right here in the public building, and I'm thinking, this is a lawsuit waiting to happen. I'm not coming across, I admired the poster, don't get me wrong, but I'm thinking, what in the world? So when Coney was going to retire, I went out there and took a picture of him in front of that poster. And when we talk about having pictures.
Documenting.
Like, and Coney was so ornery that a new town manager would come in and they were probably warned, don't mess with Coney. He's handling his department. Don't mess with him. And so no town manager ever went out there and said, Coney, take that damn poster down right now. I mean, if anybody else had gone out there and had been offended by this, what kind of a lawsuit would you have to have a bare-breasted poster
in a public office?
In a public office. I mean, can you imagine the lawsuit today? And this wasn't that. This isn't back in the 50s I'm talking about. This was in the 90s. And it was up there the whole time. And I don't, I think there was probably another, but I mean,
Oh my God. That's a good one.
So,
on that note.
So there's a story. You talk about characters. Oh yeah.
I think that covers it. Yeah. Well, is there anything else you'd like to talk about that I might have missed?
Not that I know of.
All right. I think I've probed your life.
We've kind of rattled on.
Okay. This has been great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This was fun.